Blog Talk Radio.
Entrepreneurs, and I have a very noisy dog here who is keen to express his view too. It's because there's somebody outside the house in lovely Ramsgate, and Wes is aware of it. So I'm hoping you're not going to hear too much of his woofing. But anyway,
I think that's a wonderful start to a show.
Well, it is really. There's a man coming out of his. Hello, everybody. There's a man coming out of his car with a guitar on his back. Now, do you think he's being entrepreneurial?
Well, he sounds creative. He sounds inventive. He's not dressed in black with a balaclava as well, is he?
No, he isn't. In fact, he looks like he might be about to play some country and western or something. He's got actually a sort of embroidered boy's shirt, and he's wandering along the road, and he's disappearing, and Wes will stop, and he's got all kinds of things. Maybe he's going to put himself on show at the Emporium along the end of the road. Now, that would be being entrepreneurial, wouldn't it?
Indeed.
What do you think?
And ladies and one gentleman out there, you may have concluded that today's episode is all about the concept of being self-sufficient in your employment, potentially being your own entrepreneur and generating multiple streams of income. Is that right, Clara?
Well, indeed, because I do believe that it's something that everybody today requires, to have that kind of flexibility where they can see themselves have running different streams of income, so that they're never cast aside, as so often happens when the job market just changes people from one place to another and gets rid of them. What do you think?
Now, I think this is a really important topic. There is that quote, I can't remember who said it, but it's that guy, he's very, very academic. Oh, damn, what's his name? I forget. But he said, don't keep your ego too close to your position at work, because if your position at work goes, then you go.
Yeah.
And I think actually that's quite a good approach, that you need to be, as ever, adaptable and think about multiple versions of you. Now, last episode, we talked about that, didn't we? We talked about all the different types of us that exist within us. And I think this is just another aspect of that, but tack on the fact that you can earn money from being different aspects, using different aspects of yourself. So it's really important.
Yes, I think it's about...
What do you think, Clara?
Yes, well, I definitely don't think that we are our job, for instance. I think it's about being comfortable with who you are and finding... I would always emphasise the need for people to have multiple streams of income, which does require you to be unattached. You've got to just engage in the process and not see yourself as being the thing, because otherwise it's too easy to, you know, feel slapped down, to feel rejected. And we are so much more than just the job. It's a bit like people, although I'm going to digress, and you know how good I am at this, Ruby, but people who identify themselves with a diagnosis, you know, I am depressed. You know, actually, you're Fred or Julie or whatever your name might be, you're not depressed. And so you're not a nurse or you're not a doctor. You are, you know, or a teacher. You are Rosie and you are all
that's a very interesting idea or discussion point because our society does encourage us to have a very stiff definition of who we are, socially, morally, academically, educationally, professionally.
Yeah.
And I think you can wear multiple caps, but the difficulty
yes.
comes when your energy resources can't be spread out amongst four different careers adequately, because one career, for example, teaching, would take out so much energy
of
that you
time.
Couldn't diversify very easily. So the trick is always a balance, isn't it? Don't you think, Clara?
Yes. I think that's really, you know, that is very true. And I think there are, I mean, I think the systems, the institutions of our world would basically suck us dry and throw us out when they no longer want us. Having worked in the National Health Service for many years and having many people who work with me in one of my streams of income, and I have several teachers actually who work. So, well, as well, I met one yesterday, and she was saying, "Well, I've been working 7 days a week. Basically, she's working about 18 hours a day." And I mean, that is, and she's only paid for 6 of those hours per day.
Yeah,
and only 5 days.
Sorry to
interrupt,
but you make a really important point. I have to say, in the creative industry, I didn't realise it was kind of spreading across the globe, but there's this new fashion for voluntary work, which is fabulous. You know, do some voluntary work to get work. I don't know, how is this possible? How can you, I mean, I volunteered doing some farming work, because as you know, I love the natural world. And I thought,
yeah.
Oh, brilliant, it'll lead to something, this, that, and the other. And it didn't, and it was just 6 months of hard labour.
Yes.
I got something out of it, obviously.
Free labour.
But this idea that, you know, we're lucky to even have something to turn up for, oh, God, it's so
yeah.
soul-destroying.
Well,
and the idea now that there are no more mass corporations that hire you from cradle to grave, and that we have
yeah.
to continuously adapt if we want to switch careers
yeah.
or add careers, it becomes even more challenging if you're going to have to volunteer in the next career position that you want to
yes.
go and work in. I know that's not what your colleague was doing, but it becomes relevant
no.
when you find yourself working for free.
Well, indeed. But I think internships are a magnificent example of, they don't call that volunteering. They call it basic, well, another name for it would be maybe slavery. It's very interesting. We live in a world where people can be criticised for sort of expecting everything for nothing, and yet the corporations of this world expect people to work for nothing, and they can have theories of people who are in internships, and it's just cheap, well, free labour, isn't it? And it's
absolutely.
Rather scandalous, actually.
And I think it's becoming more and more popular, which is why what we are talking about today on
it's
this
important.
Show about becoming your own boss, taking charge, I hate that phrase, boss, but thinking about the different strands of entrepreneurial you, that's why that's actually becoming a bit more important, because then you are taking control of your life.
Yes.
But you, Clara, I mean, I've only got 2 strands to my violin bow. You've got hundreds of strings, well, a good few, and you do them so expertly. You need to tell us about how do you juggle? Well, first of all, how do you take the leap completely out of the arena of conformity with a job and start up completely alone? And then how do you manage the different strands of what you do as an entrepreneur?
Well, I suppose I'm blessed by never really having identified. The fact that I ever worked in the National Health Service, I suppose, is what's remarkable, rather than anything else, because I'm such a non-conformist. And I was the bane of many men and managers' lives throughout my career, even as a student nurse. So I've always looked for various streams of doing things. So I've always experimented. And I think actually having that freedom to experiment and give things a try and explore is really, really very, very important. But it's funny, I suppose. I've sort of now got to the point where I'm sort of I've combined, you know, sort of performing, because I used to sing and act for 5 years professionally.
Wonderful.
And which was the only thing I ever really wanted to be, was an opera singer. And so now I do things. So I do public speaking. I help people to be creative in their own lives through coaching and freeing themselves from the constraints. Tyranny. Yeah, well, exactly. Absolutely, Rosie. And, you know, I mean, I think so many people are almost dying within the heavy pressures of the organisations within which they work. That, you know, they feel so blinkered, and you see people whose ability to see options is being just steadily eroded. Because they're, you know, they're sort of, they're owned by organisations that aren't really giving them the rewards to live their lives fully. So having freed myself...
Yeah, I mean,
myself,
I think there are models across the world where the working environment can be followed. I think Norway, Sweden, Denmark... I think the Dutch have a beautiful way of life as well, where there is actual gravitas placed on a certain approach to life, a kind of pedagogy, as we'd call it, in the education system. But you're right. For the majority, we are cowed down and, you know, tugging our forelock at a principle or a concept, a marching army, of people who are afraid to rise up or change anything because the risk seems too great. And I know from my experience in the workplace over many years, because I am 157, remember, all I can recall from my professional experiences are that you do okay for a period of time until someone younger comes in with better methods of working a system and those senior to you, and then they win a game, and then you have to move on. So it's a continual case of being outmaneuvered, not by ability and not by anything in particular, but this sense of the most negative aspects of competitive nature of human beings are being on full display when it comes to the workforce and, you know, being attached to a colossus of a empire of somewhere where you work. Whereas if you jump off that bandwagon into something braver, that's, I think, actually probably the direction humanity could go in and work in little enfranchisements of networks of people. And just before we got on air, didn't we, Clara, we talked about the importance of our female networks. I mean, I've got Creative Women, which does support the idea of exploring change and jumping off bandwagons. And you've got, well, list some of the things that you've got that are part of your networks.
Well, I do business mastermind coaching group with another coach. I do network marketing, which ties in with my USANA, with my health coaching. So I also help people to grow their own businesses with USANA Health Sciences. And I also do residential coaching breaks and coaching courses at home. You and I, Rosie, we work on some of those together. And I also...
Yeah, it's a good moment to plug what we're doing, and that is, guys out there, if you want to do a combination of life coaching and exploring your creative abilities, then do look out for Clara and our workshop, my workshops. They're going to be held at Clara's wonderful place in Ramsgate. So that's one additional thing that is going on. But I love very much the network that you are attached to. Like you do that, that's that wonderful community clearing the parks and stuff. Tell us about that.
Oh, right.
I know there's no money from it, but it's such an important thing.
But actually, that sort of ties in with what you were talking about, how people say, oh, you know, you must do volunteering. The world will soon be run by volunteers. So, yes, the Friends of Ramsgate Seafront, and for want of a better term, I'm actually the chair of it. So we run this organisation where we do many of the works that were done by the local council previously. But because of government cuts, there are no monies, and so we do endless hours of work improving the environment and doing gardening, restoring areas, etc., along the seafront in Ramsgate. And we're delighted to do it because it's very lovely, and the pay that we get are the wonderful compliments that we get from the public. And, of course, we get exercise, we get fresh air, and we make it look really beautiful. But, in the process, the government
can
rub its hands.
To think of it is that you are being paid in sorts in a different way because it's your philanthropy or your extraordinary positivity when it comes to community belief that is like its own fuel that is almost priceless in relation to, an ordinary day job. So
indeed,
there is some cachet attached to dealing with something that is alternative in that way, something that you really believe in or you could go out and do. But I suppose for me, I find it still a bit difficult because I'll just remember my... my failed volunteering sessions that I've done. I mean, I've done voluntary work in film companies as well when I was starting out, thinking so earnestly, this will lead to something, and it never did. So I ended up conforming a lot in my life, and I think if I look back, I would like to change how I approached that. So that's why it's really important to talk about this stuff, isn't it? What have you got on your cards next? Which direction do you want to move in when it comes to thinking of the new entrepreneurial Clara this year?
Well, it's developing more of the same, really. I think, though, that what we have to free ourselves from are beliefs that are indeed limiting to us. So what I hear in that comment from yours, about that... you tried and because you didn't get the result that you wanted, you didn't maybe continue in a field that perhaps would have brought you much greater happiness, maybe in film and film production. And I think the thing is about the fact that we have to keep the end in view, knowing really what we're wanting and aiming and working towards it. And you may try it in one way, and then you may need to keep trying it for a bit in that way, and then maybe you might need to change and approach slightly differently. Because I think it's very, very easy for people to sort of say, either I'll apply for this, once or twice, maybe even three times, and they don't get the response that they want. And so then they just think, well, that isn't for me. But if you look at an awful lot of people, it's, I mean, people like Edison, who created the light bulb, apparently it was 7,000 attempts that he made. And when, instead of, you know, sort of, he was interviewed and he was asked, you know, how did it feel to make, you know, for it to take so long? And he said, you know, was it not, you know, 7,000 failures? And he said, no. He said, what I found was 7,000 different ways to until he succeeded. And the guy who made, I mean, these are all sort of quite famous stories. An actor who was made one of the boxing films, short guy. Oh my God, my brain's died. But he'd made
Mickey Rourke?
You know? No. Sylvester Stallone, maybe?
No, he's not a short guy.
Sylvester Stallone? So, is he not? There's somebody who looks like Sylvester Stallone.
Big strapping chap, isn't he?
I'm not quite sure. But there's a guy who...
Yes, I get your gist. Yes, I understand.
Apparently
I make no comment here. Because I think looking back, I would approach it differently. Now who I am, I know how to duck and swerve and survive a bit better. But when you're younger, the challenges are so complex, bound in with identity and money and the direction that your family feel you should go in. Your heart is bound into it because you're usually invariably in love with some inappropriate idiot. So, I mean, it's very complicated starting out in life, but in a sense, there is a liberty in being a little bit older with maturity. Even if you've got a young family, you've gone through the mill a bit, so you could take those first steps into being a bit more brave, I think, with more surety, because you've got backup in different ways. So I think it depends very much on context. I think it depends very much on the history that you find yourself in. You know, we're in a very interesting global scenario at the moment, aren't we, Clara? I know from the curriculum at schools, the GCSEs are changing from levels from 1 to 9, and the emphasis is now on core subjects, obviously maths, English and science, and creativity is being disregarded, although it's being fed in by token into the curriculum, because everything now is so fueled by money. Money is our God, and this becomes a real societal pressure. So this is the time our young people are born into now, you know.
Do you think, though, because we started off talking about, you know, how people believed that they had a job for life, or they were being socialised for having a job for life.
Yes, indeed.
And so
I think I lived through the tail end of that. Yeah, so I experienced
but do you
that
not
for
think
a,
that's
I was
also
in a job
still the case?
17 years when I first started out my career. Because it was a job for life then, and then things started to change. And I think that's why now when we're in school and we talk to the children about the different versions of themselves that they'll be in their lives, we know that they will have 5 different careers by the laws of probability, given the contextual global economic changes that are going on.
So would you say, I mean, because flexibility in thinking is absolutely key for our ability to sort of dance with whatever is we're having to deal with in the given moment that we've got. And so do you think that children are being prepared to have that flexibility in thinking, to be able to use the skills, recognize the skills, and to use them in different situations? Rosie?
Well, you touch on an area of great interest for me. As you know, I want to start my own eco-environmental art school as a free school. So that would be the ideal curriculum for me, because I think the globe is in serious trouble, and I think our future is in the hands of our children and grandchildren. But that's not where we currently are. we are still in the economy, power-driven, everything must be about insatiable desire for money context globally. I really believe we are. And that is a real difficulty because it's fed into every aspect of what the children see on YouTube, on TV, on adverts and so forth. So they aren't encouraged to think outside the box ever. And they might not listen to old fuddy-duddies like us going on about theoretical difference.
Speak for yourself, Rosie.
We're less attractive to them
in the sense
that we're not going to be providing the things that are conforming. Do you know what I mean? They just want to know how much faster can my mobile phone work? How much quicker can I video call someone across in China or something, you know? So it's a different world, and we try and grapple with these different generational issues. I would change the curriculum to adapt to use creativity, adaptivity, flexibility, right there in my own perfect school. But right now it's not actually happening. We're still following a strict regimen that is changing, as I say, to simply conforming to core subjects and mathematical output.
Yes, quantifiable rather than qualitative. Because it's terribly interesting as well, isn't it? When you look at the fact that pretty much every single one of us are expected to get some chronic degenerative disease or other, and yet our happiness, our ability to relax, our ability, and there is such a myriad of ways that people can be creative, and to be creative is absolutely essential in whatever format that an individual will be find their way to be creative is essential for our holistic health and well-being, our ability to function well. And yet when we're just being driven like, you know, herds of cattle, sort of like over the cliff. Now, I have to say, folks, actually, if you're listening to this, I am a very positive human being, and I know that there are so many
I just bring Clara down. But I think, you know, what we're saying is it's not Mary Poppins on, you know, toast with marmalade. Life, you know, it's complex. And you have to think of complex methods to deal with it, to confront stuff, to change things up.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that means exploring the downside of things too. Otherwise, we would just be, you know, I don't know, on here singing songs or something. I think it's a balanced view, isn't it, Clara?
Yes, but it is about the ability to be present enough in your life to be able to read your physicality telling you whether you're on a right or wrong path. Because I know we're coming to the end of the program, but Rosie, when you're on the right path and you know that you're sort of completely in tune with what you want to do, how differently do you feel?
Oh, is this a question for me?
Yes.
I mean, obviously, I'm happiest with my hands in the garden, being connected to the earth or with animals. So I know that they're my two destinies. But I've elected not to go down that route because I have other strands that I'm working on. But I think I'll end up that way. So I know where I'm happiest. Do you know where you're happiest?
Yes. I just be engaging.
I'm actually happy, pretty happy talking on here, to be fair.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. So if the people have got thoughts or experiences of their own that they would like to share, please do write in to us, because you can comment underneath the programs once you've listened to them. So, or else, yes, indeed. So we will be talking in a future program, and we're not exactly sure yet, but we live off the hoof, don't we, Rosie?
That's how we roll, Clara.
Yes. So we're going to say thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to speaking to you soon. Lots of love and
goodbye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Lovely that you've joined
Bye-bye.
Us today. Goodbye and happy entrepreneurship.
Indeed. Lots of love. Bye-bye.